argument this morning is United States against Goodpasture. Just wait a minute for your opponent to get his case open. It's the habit of lawyers always to carry more papers than they need.
We like to travel heavy.
Whoever said the age of paper was over.
That's right.
Mr. Williams.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Stephen Williams for the defendant, James Goodpasture, in this case. Your Honors, there are a number of points that we've raised in our brief as to why this lewd and lascivious acts conviction should not be categorically considered a crime of violence. I think the primary issue that one has to deal with when looking at this statute is the incredibly wide range of conduct that it can potentially involve. And that is important because, of course, we have to look at or try to ascertain what the typical case is. And it's really impossible to determine what the typical case is under Section 288A. There's just such a wide array, certainly some of which could involve violent conduct, but much of which would not. When you look at the elements of the offense, there is only two. They're a touching with a sexual intent. And as the Ninth Circuit and state courts in California have determined, that touching doesn't have to even have been done by the defendant. So when you look at this vast array of conduct that could possibly be at issue and the lack of any specificity from the government in terms of what a typical case would be, whether it be in the form of statistics or otherwise, and quite frankly, I don't know where they would necessarily get those statistics, but the fact of the matter is the burden is on them to prove that this type of a conviction involves categorically a crime of violence.
So what proportion of the covered conduct would it take for it to be typical or whatever the requirement is?
Well, that's a great question. Of course, we don't know, but this court has spoken to that issue, at least in dicta, in the Woods case. And in the Woods case, the court stated that even cases where there may be a possibility of committing an offense in a nonviolent manner by freak chance were words that were used. Even in a case like that, if it would typically involve a violent conduct, then that would still be categorically a crime of violence. So if we can take that language and reverse it, if we're talking about it's a crime of violence as long as the only way you can commit it in a nonviolent way would be by some freak chance, we certainly don't have that here. What is typical is certainly not only by some freak chance this could be committed in a nonviolent way. Obviously, there is no element of lack of consent, first of all, so that opens up a very wide range of conduct. It doesn't necessarily require a touching by the defendant itself, so that opens up a wide range of conduct. It doesn't have to involve a touching of genitalia.
Well, presumably the reason why there isn't a requirement of consent is that the statute requires that the victim be under 14 years old. And so, you know, why would you need to require consent? Isn't it enough that there's a pretty darn good chance that when somebody has some form of sexually oriented contact with a kid under 14, that there's a pretty darn good chance that there's violence going to be involved or something?
I beg to differ, Your Honor. I think that there isn't necessarily any chance. Well, let me rephrase that. There's certainly a chance, but I don't think there's a darn good chance. And if you look at, for example, what limited statistics we have available, the government's own from the Bureau of Justice and Statistics, looking at the incidence of a use of a gun, I think it gives us a little bit of an illustration of what we're dealing with. Gun use with respect to forcible sex offenses involving minors, it almost never occurs when we're talking about individuals under the age of 13, and rarely occurs with individuals over the age of 13.
So are you saying that violence, as it's used in the statute, is essentially a surrogate for forcible? In other words, it has to be forcible in order for it to be violent. Why isn't the definition unconsented touching?
Well, and on any, of course, the Supreme Court's taking up this issue. I think this term of whether you could say that even a mere unconsented to touching would constitute force. I don't think that, you know, that's not precisely what we're dealing with here, because there isn't an element of force. But the if what you're looking at and saying
this answer is referring to the battery case pending in the Supreme Court.
That's correct, Your Honor. And I think
battery is defined in many states' law as any unconsented touching. So that if I come up to you and tickle you with a feather, that may be the crime of battery.
Right. And the reason I refer to that is because they're looking at the issue of whether or not that would be enough, that the mere unconsented to touching would be an element of force. It's not examining the residual clause. Certainly it is possible that that ruling could have an impact on this case if the court were to say any unconsented to touching were actually constituted force, and then you could extrapolate from that if the language was broad enough that it also included unconsented touching, such that if we're talking about an individual who cannot give consent. But I don't think that's what we're dealing with when we're talking about the Armed Career Criminal Statute, because what the discussion in Begay relates to, the manner in which these types of offenses are committed, and they have to be committed in a violent or aggressive manner. And I think that raises a distinction that I alluded to in the brief, and I think needs to be looked at here. When the court held in the Patterson case recently that risk of harm is something that should be or can be considered in looking at the manner of commission, we've, of course, first asserted that we believe that's inaccurate because it conflates the two prongs, the manner of commission versus the risk of harm associated with it. But even if the court does persist in using that test, I think that as it was examined in the Thornton case by the Fourth Circuit is helpful. When you look at risk of harm, when we're talking about that, I think we need to distinguish risk of violent conduct versus risk of harm. In risk of harm, in cases predating Begay that this court has looked at, have oftentimes discussed long-term remote types of risks, such as risk of pregnancy or risk of STDs, versus the immediate and foreseeable consequences of that act, as discussed in the Thornton case, which I think supports our position very much in that a statutory rape in that type of a situation would not be considered a crime of violence. I'd reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Mr. Norwood.
And may it please the court. My colleague talked a lot about what types of activities are encompassed within the statute. And one of his arguments was, well, it could involve consent, and Judge Kennelly pointed out that we are dealing with minors under the age specifically of 14 years old. My colleague also mentioned, well, the defendant doesn't even have to touch the child. Others could, or the child himself could, him or herself could. Well, that even brings out the greater risk of the serious potential risk of physical harm if the defendant is forcing the child to touch him or herself or having another do it. We're not talking about innocent touching. We're not talking about somebody giving their daughter a hug and saying good job at the soccer game. We're talking
about... What do you think is the bearing on this case of our decision in United States against Osborne?
Your Honor, I'm not familiar with Osborne, to be perfectly honest.
Yes, unfortunately, neither side cites Osborne, but we had the question in Osborne was whether a statute that's functionally identical to the California offense of a lewd act on a child counts as an abusive felony for the purpose of a federal sentencing enhancement. And we held in Osborne that the answer is no. It does not count as an abusive felony unless, at a minimum, it's an element of the offense that there be a substantial age difference. But otherwise, what Osborne said is that this is the kind of act that can be committed by any, you know, any child engaged in exploratory and, at least physically, harmless touching. All the arguments the government is making in this case were considered and rejected by this court in Osborne. That's why I asked whether you had looked at Osborne.
No, Your Honor.
Now, the only thing I can think of, putting Osborne to one side, is that it's conceivable the Supreme Court will accept the Solicitor General's argument in Johnson, which is that a case comes within a state crime comes within the statutory definition if the element entails any touching of any kind, so that in my feather hypothetical, one would say, yes, that is in fact a violent felony for federal law if I, without your consent, tickle you with a feather.
Yes, Your Honor.
My understanding is that the justices expressed some skepticism about that, but maybe we shouldn't try to anticipate what they're going to do.
No, we shouldn't. And I submit also some, under any statute, there can be a wide range of hypotheticals that fall within it, but there has to be a little bit of...
Yeah, but that's the problem in Woods. No. Woods said that a homicide offense was not a crime of violence for federal purposes because it's possible to imagine the crime of what amounted to a second-degree murder or a manslaughter being committed in a kind of nonviolent and accidental way.
And I thought Woods also focused on the nature of the intent. In that case, the act was unintentional, and they talked about whether the act was intentional or reckless or willful, and that was a component of the Woods decision.
Included the state offense in Woods included a mental component of either intent or recklessness, and of course recklessness is a form of intent.
And I thought the killing was an unintended.
Don't you think it would be more than a little foolish? Maybe federal courts produce their share of foolish cases. If we were to hold that manslaughter is not a crime of violence, but petting is.
Your Honor, it may sound irrational, but it in the government's opinion, and I know the decisions are done, but aggravated battery of a pregnant woman, if you ask the common person on the street, is that a violent act, they would say yes, but it's not under this court's jurisprudence.
Is the Solicitor General going to file a cert petition in Woods?
Your Honor, I don't know. I'm just an AUSA in Southern Illinois. I don't know what the Solicitor General has planned on that front. But when you look at one of the hypotheticals I was thinking of, and it's sort of, in my opinion, shows this crime of violence taken to its logical extreme, but is, say a defendant saw a child shoplift a T-shirt and said, if you don't commit a sex act with me, I'm going to tell the police, and then commit it, and the child agrees to the sex act. Well, if you charge them with extortion, that is threatening to tell the police if you don't do a sex act with me, that's a crime of violence. So the proposition to the child, here's what I'm going to do if you don't have sex with me, is a crime of violence, but the actual act with a child would not be. I mean, that in the government's opinion, leads to a result that is somewhat absurd. If you look at the burglary component of the crime of violence, most burglars want to burglarize an unoccupied home. Most burglars do not want any violence. Most burglars want to sneak in when nobody's there, take something, and sneak out. But the crime of violence arises because there is a serious potential risk if, in that 1 in 100 chance, somebody is at home.
Well, you're immensely aided by the fact that the statute names burglary as a crime of violence.
Exactly, Your Honor. But the underlying principle by having burglary or extortion as an enumerated crime of violence is because there is that 1 in 100 chance where a burglar...
On that argument, of course, felony drunk driving is a crime of violence. because felony drunk driving is even more dangerous than burglary. And Begay held otherwise.
Your Honor, Begay did, but it's my understanding that Begay did based upon the intent, not the actual act of drunk driving and possibly killing somebody, but the intent.
I don't think so. Begay said there had to be, quote, an intentional aggressive act. So there has to be an intentional act. There has to be an aggressive act. The question under this California statute is, where is the aggressive act?
Where is the aggressive act?
The aggressive act is
a touching in a sexual nature of a minor,
and
without,
why is that
presumably
aggressive?
Without that person's consent.
Well, maybe you were never in high school or junior high school, but usually sexual touching of a minor is not done in an aggressive manner. It might be in an aggressive manner if there's a substantial age difference, or if the toucher is a relative, or if, right, you can imagine a whole lot of things that would make this look worse, but they're not in the state statute.
No, Your Honor, but the touching must be with a specific intent.
If 14-year-olds get together and sit in the back seat of a car and do things that 14-year-olds are inclined to do in the back seat of cars, they violate this statute, but one wouldn't think of that as aggressive.
Yes, Your Honor, if one were 14 and one were 13, assuming that California assuming that California would prosecute
we're not in this for prosecutorial discretion. As a matter of whether one violates the statute, if two people age 13 sit in the back seat of a car and engage in physical exploration, they violate this law without anything that would normally be understood as being aggressive.
Under that hypothetical, true, Your Honor. I'm not disputing that.
It's what happens all the time in real life.
I understand, Your Honor. But if there is no, with respect, and I understand the court can read the statute and make its own decision, but with respect, there's a little bit of an absence of bringing common sense into the process, because no prosecutor in their right mind would prosecute two 13-year-olds for necking in the back of seat of a car. I wouldn't think so. I wouldn't think so.
At least not in California.
I'm not going to comment on our sister state out west. But the bottom line is...
But the fact is that we have to go on what's stated in the elements of the statute and not in the fact that no prosecutor would bring this prosecution unless there was something abusive about it, like a big age difference or a relative status or real force or something like that. It's not in the statute, and that's actually what the point of Osborne was.
Yeah.
Prosecutors may not prosecute without something abusive, but it's not in the statute.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, Your Honor, the only thing I can say is, in the case of People versus Martinez from the California Supreme Court defining this, the court indicated that the circumstances of the touching remain highly relevant to the violation, Section 288 violation. The trier of fact must find a union of act and sexual intent. And I understand that, I see my time is up, Your Honor. I apologize.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Williams?
I just want to make a couple comments based upon the court's question about Osborne. We do cite it briefly in our reply brief, Your Honor. I do understand that why the court is seeing this as being a highly relevant case. It does deal with sexual abuse as opposed to a crime of violence, but I do believe that given the wide range of conduct that is at issue with respect to, or could be at issue with respect to Section 288A, and without knowing or being able to determine what a typical case is, Osborne is highly relevant when viewed through that prism, which is, of course, the prism we're viewing it through. So I understand where the court is coming from under those circumstances in looking at that. And I think that, again, when you look at the statute alone, as we're dealing with, the government is attempting to simply say any type of a sexual conduct or contact involving a minor, period, would be categorically described as a crime of violence. That is what the argument is that they are making at bottom. If it involves a minor and there's some type of sexual intent, regardless of the circumstances, that would categorically be a crime of violence. This court's rejected that even pre-Begay in the Shannon opinion. I think even pre-Begay, this court would have to say that this does not constitute a crime of violence categorically. Now, post-Begay, there's even more reason to do so because of the wide range of conduct that looks at the manner in which this could be committed. And it could be committed in any number of ways, that the manner of which is not violent. The fact that you may have, even the fact that there may be an age difference, does not necessarily make this a crime of violence. Innocent touching, otherwise warmly received, can be considered a violation of this statute. So to take that type of conduct, and then say categorically,
what you're referring to is innocent touching. In California, there is no such thing as a sexual touching of a 13-year-old that is innocent.
I understand that. That's the language that comes from the California case law. That's correct, Your Honor. There is the innocent touching, otherwise warmly received, is a violation of the statute because of that conclusion. Therefore, I would agree, you've got to, under the categorical approach, it doesn't necessarily involve violence. Thank you, Your Honors.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Counsel. I think that I will give the parties 10 days to file supplemental memos discussing Osborne, discussing the bearing of Osborne on this case. And if Johnson happens, the Supreme Court's battery case, if Johnson happens to come down during that time, to discuss Johnson as well. Johnson was argued in October, very first week of the Supreme Court's term, and it could be released any day now. So I'll give you 10 days to file memos addressing Osborne and conditionally addressing Johnson.
Thank you.
Okay? Thank you very much. The case is taken under